So welcome everybody to the bonus round of Titus Andronicus. I had so much to say that they let me say it all. Huzzah. Okay, so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the production history of Titus Andronicus, which is really, really interesting because it's had such a crazy ass performance history. So the first thing to note is that Titus was super, super popular when it was performed. It was one of the most performed plays of the day for almost 8 months, which is about unheard of. And we know that because of Henslowe's Diary, which is this really great resource. If you don't know it, you should check it out, where it's basically just a book of all the plays that Shakespeare's company put on and how much money they made from each performance. And they were rolling in the dough when they were making Titus, and they kept doing it over and over and over. And so then, over the course of the next few centuries, it became really maligned, and people didn't like it. And it was only in the latter half of the 20th century that this sort of pattern of shitting all over Titus Andronicus for being a terrible play started subsiding. So the best known modern production of Titus Andronicus, you've probably seen it, maybe, I hope it's great, is Julie Taymor's 1999 movie, which was actually an adaptation of her 1994 production that she did, Just Hamlet.
It's not great. It's a fucking shit show train wreck.
No,
You're
it's not as
welcome.
great. Don't listen to Just Hamlet, listen
Jess
to me.
has feelings about Julie
It's
Taymor,
fine, you
but
can have.
also that movie is bananas.
It is bananas, but it's like good bananas. First thing to know about this movie is that it has a crazy all-star cast. So you've got Anthony Hopkins, Alan Cumming, Jessica Lange, Colm Feore, Jonathan Rhys, I can never say his middle name, Myers, and then Laura Fraser, who is one of my favorite actresses of all time. She plays the blacksmith in A Knight's Tale, which is probably the most important thing she's ever done. And she gets like 16th billing on IMDb for playing Lavinia, which is bullshit, by the way. So also, fun fact, the guy who plays the clown in this movie, he's this Italian actor. His name is Dario D'Ambrosi, and he is the director of an Italian Shakespeare company that works with people with mental and physical disabilities. And so my 38th Titus that I saw just a couple of weeks ago was actually directed by him, and I saw it in New York City. And it was a production featuring all Italian people who have some degree of mental retardation or Asperger's. And it was one of the most profound nights in the theater that I've ever seen or been a part of. And it was really, really special. And so it was really cool because as I was going through the IMDb cast, I was like, oh, I met that guy. I know him. I said hello to him in English and we waved. It was fun. And so his work is really cool and really important, but that was sort of a digression, so you're welcome. So anyway, Titus has gone through a lot of adaptation over the centuries because it turns out when you put a lot of stuff like beheading and cannibalism in your play, people get mad. So one of my favorite ones was from this guy named Edward Ravenscroft, who was a writer and he was a playwright, and he actually rewrote the play in 1687. And he wrote, and I wrote down the quote. I have a bunch of quotes about Titus Andronicus because they're my favorite. And he said, "This is the most incorrect and indigested piece in all of Shakespeare's works. It seems rather a heap of rubbish than a structure." Which I'm like, great job. But then he was criticized because at the time that Mr. Ravenscroft was writing, women actresses were becoming quite popular. And so he was accused of, making a Titus Andronicus that was very exploitive of the female form, which is very shameful, very exciting. So, we actually see this sort of adaptation happening very frequently in Titus. There's all sorts of editions of Titus with changes and reductions to the violence. And one of the things to note about Titus Andronicus is that the rape of Lavinia actually happens off stage. And I think this is one of the most interesting and profound things that Shakespeare does. He does not show us the rape. And any production that shows you the rape is wrong, because I think Shakespeare understood something very implicitly about his audience, about the time that he was writing, and even about media today. If you think of all of your favorite horror movies, if you think of, scary films that you've seen, what they don't show you is always scarier and more affecting than what they do show you. And so, yeah, right? And so a production of Titus Andronicus that shows the rape diminishes all the horror, like, and it sounds really weird to put it like this, all the horrible things that could be happening to her are eliminated. And so making the rape sort of a mystery about how it happens and what happens, and I'm gonna get really graphic for a second. I'm gonna give you an opportunity to fast forward. In what order things happen, is a question. that a lot of productions choose to answer, and I think it's much better and a much stronger choice if you don't. So that is my little soapbox. You're welcome. So anyway, over the course of getting my degrees, I actually did quite a bit of research into the specific stage direction of the reveal of Lavinia, because I'm a nerd and I like to research things. And it's really interesting to see how the original stage direction changed from the original stage direction is enter Lavinia ravished, her hands cut off and her tongue cut out. And a lot of editions, especially in the Victorian era, will change it to enter Lavinia in disarray. One of my favorite ones is enter Lavinia with her hair down. Gasp. Y'all, gasp.
Oh, scandalous.
See, right? I'm so scandalized. So we horrifying. See that a lot, right? So we see that as we, especially as we get into the Victorian era, we start to see more and more criticism of the play from like literary uppity types who just don't think that it's that good of a play, but also have a lot of moralistic objections to the content. But the problem, though, is that they're looking at the context and the content, not the language and not the purpose of the violence. And I think that's a really important thing to remember about Titus Andronicus. If you're going to do Titus Andronicus, you have to contextualize the violence. Violence for violence sake is boring. It's sort of why there's like 15 Saw movies, but they get really shitty after like the second one, is because they just become violence for violence sake, right? You're just watching torture porn. But Titus is not torture porn. There is a point and a sort of ultimate end goal to every single act of violence, whether or not it seems meaningful at the time. So you have to sort of go back. It's like, this is a weird analogy, but you're welcome. It's like Hamilton. If you listen to the first song of Hamilton and nothing else, you're like, well, that's a rap musical. But if you listen to it all the way through, you realize that there are through lines and themes and repetitions that carry through the entire body of the show and are only sort of all wrapped up at the end. And that's exactly what Titus does, which is why I believe to my core that Lin-Manuel Miranda is the next William Shakespeare. And you can write that on my fucking grave, because I believe it to my soul. You're welcome. Anyway, rant over. So in 1927... So we see like Victorian era happens. People are like, oh, this play is terrible. And then T.S. Eliot wrote one of the best quotes about Titus Andronicus that's like pretty famous. And he said that it's one of the stupidest and most uninspired plays ever written. But it's also his fault that Cats is a musical. So we disregard all of those things. Ouch. That's a joke that I stole from my thesis presentation, but I'm still really proud of it. So then we get into modern day, right? And so some this weird sort of split happens. You've got this sort of team of theater makers and directors who are like about Titus Andronicus. And so in 1955, Peter Brook produced this super sort of like life-changing theater making changing production that starred Laurence Olivier as Titus, and it had Vivian Leigh of Gone with the Wind fame as Lavinia, which is really cool. She was in Titus Andronicus one time. But this production was criticized. It was really popular at the time, and then since then it's sort of been criticized because it muted a lot of the violence. They staged a lot of the on stage violence, because there are moments of violence that you see on stage in Titus. And they also sort of removed all of the blood and they used ribbons instead. So sort of this like sort of metaphorical blood, which I think I've seen like several productions have done that. And sometimes, to be really honest, I'm engaged to a props master. Sometimes it's budgetary more than artistic. Stage blood costs a fuck ton of money. And everybody thought that this production was going to fail. They did not think it was going to be successful. So putting myself in Peter Brook's shoes, it sort of makes sense. Yeah, we can reuse these ribbons. We don't know if this play is going to be successful. Maybe we don't use blood. I like it. I think it's a good idea. So this is sort of a digression, but like I was talking about before, there's been some horror movie adaptations of Titus Andronicus as well. And one of the best ones was this one that was made in the 70s called Theater of Blood. And it stars motherfucking Vincent Price. And so the plot of it is that there's this guy who's supposed to be like the greatest Shakespeare actor of all time. And he gets panned by a critic. And so he starts like stalking this critic. And then at the end, he feeds the critic his poodles.
Wait, that's his own poodles or the critic's
like
poodles?
The critic has these like treasured poodles.
Oh my God.
Then, like, he like kills his poodles and he like bakes them into a stew and is like, here, casually.
No.
Yeah, like, right? So there's like, It's bizarre. And it's like the loosest adaptation ever. But it's just, it's so fucking funny. Like, it's a great, like, 90 minutes of your life that you can never get back. But whatever. But there's been a lot of bad adaptations of Titus. There's this awful one that the BBC made in the 80s. And it was one of those ones that they staged, like, plays and then they videoed them. But the problem is that they did not account for things like close-ups. And so there's this really great moment in my favorite thing about this movie is that Titus is like, oh no, I'm so sad that your tongue got cut out, Lavinia. And there's this super tight close-up and then Lavinia licks her fucking lips. And it's like the most like, bitch, you have a tongue. Like, just keep it in your mouth. Like, what are you doing? Like, actress, like, oh my God, it's awful. It's so boring. Like, it's not a great place to start your Titus Andronicus journey. It's awful. So, you know, so critics are writing about Titus. So we get to like the mid, like late to 90s. And so Harold Bloom, who we all love, Harold Bloom and the invention of Shakespeare, just blasts Titus. And he's like, this play is garbage. It's terrible. Hold on. I have an exact quote. Rustle my paper so it sounds official. And he says, I can concede no intrinsic value to Titus Andronicus, which I was like, well, you're wrong, Harold Bloom, and now we're in a fight. So it's weird, right? Because like some people love it, some people hate it. But a lot of research and writing has been done on why this play has had sort of this sudden resurgence. And a lot of scholars, a lot of writers point to things like the rise in mass violence, the accessibility of weapons, genocide, violence against women are still, like I talked about in the podcast, you know, earlier, things like genocides and civil war have become very commonplace in many areas of the country and in the world. And so 400 years ago, it was, you know, war was a thing, but mass genocide and like mass violence were concepts that were explored and like sometimes happen, but not to the frequency they do today. And so Titus sort of seems like this weird sort of modern reflection on both historical and modern violence at the same time. So in the 60s, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. So in the 60s, speaking of that sort of modern violence, Douglas Seal directed this production at Center Stage in Baltimore. And he made the Andronici Nazis, which was weird. And so he set the play in like World War II, and he made a bunch of like parallels to like concentration camps and like Hiroshima. And it was a weird production, but it got a lot of attention because it was one of the first productions after Peter Brook that really sort of tried to modernize it and tried to sort of bring it into a historical context. Although I sort of fundamentally disagree with casting the Andronici as Nazis, because he's wrong. That's not right. That's incorrect. But it's been 40, 50 years, so I can talk shit about his production.
Right. Well, I mean, that sounds like one of those instances where it's like the concept superseded the text.
It was a very context heavy production. There were a lot of things. There's a couple of like performance criticisms of Titus that talk a lot about that production. And that's basically what they say, is that he was trying to get so much in there that it just he was sort of the Darren Nichols of theater, if you will.
He was trying to do too much.
There's been a lot of, like, there's been a lot of writing about Titus, but it's funny because I say there's a lot of writing and, you know, you go to the folder and there's like 14 shelves of, you know, Hamlet writing, and there's like half a bookshelf of Titus. So like not as much as some of the other plays, but I think it's because it's a hard and it's a challenging play. But there's this really great scholar named Jan Kott, who wrote one of the most important things that I read for my thesis, is that Titus Andronicus is not the most violent of Shakespeare's plays. Richard III is. More people die in Richard III than they do in Titus Andronicus, which people seem to forget when they're bitching about Titus Andronicus. Like, no, one of the history plays is actually more violent. Titus Andronicus is just more gruesome. There's a difference. It's important to remember that when you're talking about Titus Andronicus. And since then, there have been some really, really great productions, a lot of which I've gotten the good fortune to see. In 2006 is actually weird. 2005 was the year that I sort of got into Titus. In 2006, both the RSC and the Globe staged separate productions of Titus. And they were very different stylistically or whatever. But if you've ever heard stories about, you know, like, oh, there were like 1,000 people fainted at the Globe or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's people were like vomiting. And
yeah, that's those productions. Although it was really funny because I actually got to talk to an actor who was a part of that production. And he was talking to me one time about it. And he said, yeah, you know, like they were counting the number of people who fainted at our Titus, except that like 30 people or, you know, whatever the number is, 12 or 13 people or whatever, faint during every Globe production. This was just the time that somebody bothered to make a big deal about it because people are standing for 3 hours and they lock their knees. Like people drop all the time.
Gotta so unlock those knees.
I just always thought that was really funny. So yeah, so, you know, now we're in 2018, hashtag Happy New Year. And, you know, there's lots of productions of Titus. We're sort of seeing this really great sort of modern resurgence of it. And it's I'm really happy because I'm so close to 40. I'm almost closer to 50, which is crazy.
Well, like you said, I mean, this is the age of Game of Thrones. So, like,
yeah,
you know, the violence and the gruesomeness is appealing to a lot of audiences now.
Yeah, I think it's become much more accessible as well. Like, yeah. I think for a lot of theater companies, there is that sort of hesitancy about, like, well, how do I stage a rape? How do I stage a decapitation? Right. You know, how do I stage? But it's like, bitch, it's on HBO. Like, you can just watch that now and nobody really has a problem with it.
Also, like you said, you don't have to stage the rape because it doesn't happen on stage.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so
just
there's
the before and after.
Just the before and the after and the big reveal. My pro tip to anyone who might be listening out there is, for the love of God, when you are staging your big reveal scene of Lavinia after she has been raped and mutilated, do not use mint flavored blood because that shit will burn a hole in your mouth. That is my public service announcement, is don't use the mint flavored blood. Just use regular flavored blood. Thank you. That's all I ask. Aren't you glad you had me on?
That was a thing.
That happened to me. I had blisters in my mouth for 6 months because the peppermint like burned. Because you have to hold like a mouthful of blood for like 80, 90 lines. Like it's a long ass time and it's a sad speech. So there's like, you know, like wailing and weeping. And then you're like, oh, blood. And then you're like, oh, my mouth hurts.
Oh, man.
Hashtag nonsense. It's fine.